On this episode of Skeptico, Alex talks with paranormal podcast host Jim Harold.
Are you surprised that more media outlets haven't jumped into it with just kind of a straightforward approach, not a giggle approach or not a wildly conspiratorial approach, but just kind of the straightforward, here's a high quality author that's put out an interesting book, let's talk to them?
That's my problem with the mainstream media when it comes to something like the paranormal. In some cases, it may not be a conspiracy. It's just, this is the way we cover the paranormal. We laugh at it, we giggle at it, we play the X-Files music, we put it as the kicker to the end of the broadcast, and we're done. So I think it's more of a convention than anything else.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on this episode of Skeptico, I have an interesting interview with Jim Harold, host of the Paranormal Podcast. I'm going to get right to that interview in a minute, but I also wanted to invite you to stick around after the interview, and I want to kind of talk about where the show was going, because some folks have had some interest and concern along those lines, and I have some thoughts I want to share with you after my interview with Jim Harold. Today, we welcome Jim Harold to Skeptico. As host of the super successful Paranormal Podcast show, Jim covers all manner of paranormal topics, including ghosts, hauntings, UFOs, parapsychology, and many other that we will get into today. Jim, I'm a longtime fan of your show, and I want to welcome you to Skeptico.
Well, thank you, Alex. It's very gracious of you to ask me to be on the program, and I'm honored.
You know, you do have a great show, a unique show, and I thought we could start just by telling folks who maybe don't know about it a little bit about the Paranormal Podcast, some of the history to it, and what I'm particularly interested in is your overall perspective on covering the paranormal, if you had any thoughts on that.
Sure. Well, the Paranormal Podcast is my flagship podcast. It's the one I started out with actually here in about 4 days on from when we're recording. It's July 29th will be my 6-year anniversary. I've done 200 shows, of which the 200th went up today, and that is with Michael Shermer, the super skeptic. And it's kind of branched off from there. I have several other shows now. I have Jim Harold's Campfire, which are personal ghost stories. I have the Paranormal Report, which is a paranormal news show with Clayton Morse from the Fox News Channel. I do another show called Weird News Radio with Kate Botello. If folks remember her from Tech TV, used to co-host with Leo Laporte. That's kind of a funny show. And then I have a Plus Club. So really the Paranormal Podcast is kind of blossomed into almost a mini network of shows I do, all from my, I'm an independent content creator like you, Alex, and right here from my home studio. In terms of my thoughts about covering the paranormal, I'm in my early 40s, and a program that I loved growing up was In Search Of. And they did, it was hosted, of course, by Leonard Nimoy. Right. And they would do these weekly exposés on different stories. And when I started to podcast 6 years ago, I was searching for a topic, and because I had love for broadcasting. And I thought, well, what really, if I go into a bookstore, what's the first section I go to? What if I go to the library? Because I have many interests, like most of us, history, music, sports, news, politics. But all those things, I thought, I really couldn't add anything to the discussion. And I thought, I'm fascinated by the paranormal, and I bet there's at least 10 or 20 people out there who are interested in it too. Right. And not from the kind of, let's go act crazy and go into a house and chase ghosts and things like that. And I don't want to cast too wide of a net on that, because I don't want to poo-poo all ghost hunting. But that wasn't what I was interested in. I was interested in having people on my program who had a particular point of view, had a book, had a theory about UFOs, had a theory about ghosts, and to just have them on and hear them out, not argue with them, not say if they were right or wrong, but just say, okay, Mr. Author, Mr. Expert, Mrs. Expert, tell us what you think. And the funny thing, Alex, I'll tell you, don't want to be too long-winded here, but I'll tell you my philosophy at the beginning was, this is going to be great. I'm going to do this show for about 6 months. I'm going to get to talk to all these different experts and things. I'll have this paranormal stuff figured out. Well, the truth is, 6 years in, I have more questions than I have answers. But it's been a fascinating journey.
Well, that's great. And I can certainly relate to the joy of just being able to talk to so many knowledgeable, well-informed people and getting to ask them questions. It's kind of fun.
It is.
You know? And it's certainly fun to hook up with you and then network into all the guests that you've had on. But I have to say, I think you really did a pretty good job of summing that up and opens up a lot of questions. You do a great job. You come on with a straightforward show, very non-judgmental approach. You know, one thing I guess I wonder, particularly about your show, you're obviously covering an area that has a great deal of interest to the general public. But we still, even in this age, 2011, we don't get a lot of serious mainstream media coverage. Are you surprised that more media outlets haven't jumped into it with just kind of a straightforward approach, not a giggle approach or not a wildly conspiratorial approach, but just kind of the straightforward, here's a high quality author that's put out an interesting book, let's talk to him. I mean, why don't more of them do it just for the numbers' sake?
I wish I knew the answer to that, because that's my problem with the mainstream media when it comes to something like the paranormal. I mean, I think those of us who, and later on I could talk about my personal beliefs, although I try not to inject too much of that into the program. I treat it more as a straight news program with some personal opinion. But my favorite is I could go into any local newsroom and write the script according to them for a UFO story. You would put it towards the end of the broadcast. You would have, well, Springfield residents today say they may have seen a UFO and it's a visit from the X-Files. Joe Johnson will tell us more. And they have the X-Files music playing. And then they go in and they have the arched eyebrows and they're giggling. And it's just annoying. And every person listening to this can see that news package in their mind's eye. And that tells me that it's cliched, because news coverage that is good is not cliched. It should have some surprises. And it's funny, there have been some good things done in the mainstream media, but they're few and far between. And one of the best things I ever saw was the late, great Peter Jennings, right before he got sick, did this, what I thought was a pretty good, probably 2004, I'm thinking 2005, a really good long-form ABC program on UFOs. And Alex, I can't tell you why it is. I mean, I don't know that it's a conspiracy. I think maybe part of it is this. Maybe it is that people who are in the mainstream media understand that this area has a giggle factor. So they're almost afraid to treat it seriously because they've been trained. Everything they've seen, everything they've been taught over the last 15, 20 years is the template is, let's arch our eyebrows, let's giggle, and let's play the X-Files music. And television, local television in particular, is a job of conventions. They have a set of things. You know, if they cover a fire story, you could probably see 20 fire stories all around the country. They're going to look basically the same. And I think in some cases, it may not be a conspiracy. It's just, this is the way we cover the paranormal. We laugh at it. We giggle at it. We play the X-Files music. We put it as the kicker to the end of the broadcast, and we're done. So I think it's more of a convention than anything else.
I can see where you're coming from, and certainly I'm not going to jump too quickly on the conspiracy idea, but I do think we have to go there a little bit, because you have to roll back and say, who created the template in the first place, and who keeps driving it? You know, we found in the kind of topics that we cover here and care about here on Skeptico, particularly like near-death experience science, right. And we always approach it from the science angle. We're kind of digging into research studies and talking about statistics and all that kind of stuff. But it amazes me that we've run into the same kind of thing where, you know, there'll be this study we featured not too long ago, the small group of Slovenian doctors that did a small case study with 11 people in it, and it just blows up as international news because the mainstream story that you want to do, that which is near-death experiences are all just a figment of the imagination, they're illusion, you know. So that story was in that vibe, so it was like, great, this is going to go huge. And then you have all these other guys, the tremendous amount of evidence suggesting that there isn't a conventional medical explanation, and those barely get any coverage. So that makes me kind of wonder. But the other thing that really kind of makes me wonder is just the way that it's done and the quality of the people involved. It doesn't seem to always balance. And yet, as you alluded to before, and I guess you didn't go there, but even when we do get a balance on these stories, it seems like in a lot of cases it's a forced balance, you know?
We'll get
a lot of really good quality work, you know. People have gone and done on the UFO thing. They have the radar matched with the on-site observation, matched with all these other eyewitness reports and video. And then on the other side, to balance it out, we have some half-baked debunker who has some theory.
This is true. A good example of that is actually, and if anybody, I think it's on the internet, I think you can find it in some places like YouTube and so forth. I had a former professor. Well, I'll just tell the story real quick for folks that haven't heard it. I had Robert Hastings on the show, who's kind of the major guy between the whole thing where 1967 Malmstrom Air Force Base, where supposedly ICBMs were taken offline. And at the same time, there were UFO sightings in the area. So, and back in September, there was a big, last September, a big press conference at the National Press Club to go over this. So I was talking to him, and I was going through his book, and after the show, I said, there's this one story in here. It seems very familiar to me. You had a gentleman who had been an Air Force film officer, was in charge of filming tests of missiles in the early 60s, Big Sur, California. And he said that he saw something shoot down a missile, something not of the U.S. Air Force stock. And he was basically hushed up. And I said, I think I know who that is. And he said, who? I named the name. Bob Jacobs is the name, Dr. Bob Jacobs. And he said, yeah, that's him. Turns out that I'd heard the story 20 years before when Dr. Jacobs was a professor of mine, before I ever got into this. Well, but to exactly your point, let's fast forward 20 years later. He was on Larry King a couple of years back telling his story. This guy, PhD, professor for many years, very knowledgeable about video and film, saying, hey, in the early 60s, I had this experience where I saw something shoot down a missile. What it is, I don't know. But basically, it came up to the missile and went around in 360 degrees and basically disintegrated it. And I had it on film. So anyway, it was Larry King, I believe it was Bob Hastings, and then they had also on there Bill Nye, the science guy,
right,
who obviously knew nothing about the case and was just throwing up like, and that's the thing that gets me, is with skeptics throwing up general objections, not specific objections, kind of what you're saying, just throwing up whatever. Oh, it could have been water vapor or whatever he was saying. And Dr. Jacobs, to his credit, lit into him. And he's like, pal, I was there. I know what I saw. It was not a... So if anybody wants to see that, you could probably look up Larry King and Bob Jacobs, Bill Nye, the science guy, on YouTube or somewhere out there. There's a video of it.
I've seen the video. It's really...
Yeah, I know Dr. Jacobs. Yeah, he's a great guy. And really, this is a guy who was a professor. What does he have to gain 40 years after the fact going on national TV and saying this happened? He didn't write a book. He didn't make any money off of it. What did he have to gain? Nothing.
Right. And this is the point I guess I was driving at, and I want to pursue it a little bit further because I think it's really interesting. It's maybe a little bit of inside baseball, but when the heck are we going to get a chance to talk inside baseball? And that's that this pattern that you just laid out, I've seen repeated over and over and over again in a variety of different fields. So if you want to go into telepathy, which is really in parapsychology psi stuff, which is really unrelated to the near-death experience stuff that I was talking about. Completely different. I mean, that's done by people in hospital, medical researchers, doctors. Parapsychology is obviously often done by psychologists and researchers like that. Patterns repeated over and over. You go over and then you go in the UFO and that thing. Patterns repeated again and again. So it kind of makes me think that there is a little bit more to it. Aren't all these topics that we would categorize in the paranormal, aren't they so threatening to the institutions that are in control that they're just bound to stir up this kind of controversy, this kind of pushback, and that shouldn't we expect that there's going to be some games being played behind the scenes that we can't even be fully aware of?
I think it's that to an extent. I also think that, you know, just as we believers, and at some point I want to kind of give you my general theory of the paranormal, but we as, quote, believers have blind spots and we have biases. Scientists have, and skeptics have, blind spots and biases. And I think that in general, and I'm not speaking about every skeptic, but many times skeptics and scientists will say, well, I am scientific, I am skeptical, therefore I am totally objective and I'm not subjective at all. And therefore I am the arbiter of what is right and what is wrong and what is true and what is false. And don't see the fact that they themselves have their own biases. I'm very willing to recognize and acknowledge my biases. So I think sometimes even more so than an intentional quashing, although I do think that happens. Don't get me wrong. I do think it happens. I think sometimes it's people quashing things because, they can't be the case. As I mentioned earlier, I had Michael Shermer on the show. And I said, well, Dr. Shermer, isn't it true that scientists, you know, make mistakes too? I mean, for example, ether. Scientists thought there was ether. And I'm quite confident if you would have talked to those scientists at that time and said, well, there absolutely is no ether, they would have laughed at you and said, you're ridiculous, I'm a scientist. And he acknowledged but it doesn't seem to happen very often where there's that acknowledgement. And I think science sometimes can be like a religion, and people are dogmatic about that religion. And, you know, it's like, well, it can't be, you know, this NDE thing that you talked about, this near-death experience study, you know, that flies in the face of what they believe. So therefore they're going to say, well, the study's flawed, or the sample size isn't big enough, or there were intervening variables, or there was contaminated experimentation, or whatever the excuse is. You know, it's kind of like the excuse du jour. So I think that a lot of times they're just so dogmatic about it that it can't be true. So of course it's got to be one of these, you know, 10 standard excuses.
Sure. But let's drill into that a little bit. Michael Shermer is a great example because, you know, bringing it back to the NDE case, I'll give you a little story on Michael Shermer. One of the best known NDE researchers in the world is a guy named Pim van Lommel from the Netherlands. Pretty famously, about 10 years ago, he published his first batch of research, his first paper on that. And it was reported by Michael Shermer in Scientific America. And Shermer completely got it wrong. He completely misrepresented what van Lommel had said, which was that these near-death experiences defy conventional medical explanations. And Shermer pieced together a story that said just the opposite. Well, van Lommel called him on it and publicly published a letter saying, you got it wrong. That's not what I said. The conclusion of the study was the opposite. So what do we do in that case? What do we expect from Michael Shermer, skeptic? Journalist, a retraction, a correction? We get neither. We get none. So, again, I'm not sure I'd be as generous of spirit as you are to Michael Shermer and the other skeptics I've encountered, I think are kind of in the same ilk. I mean, don't we have to drive for that truth? I mean, do we always have to kind of fall back into this, well, you know, they have an opinion and we're all biased? I mean, sure, that's true, but ultimately, the whole idea of science is that we can sift through that and we can find or at least nudge a little bit closer to the truth.
Oh, I agree that we need to try to get closer to that truth. And I'll share with you my philosophy on this, because here's where I have the issue with the skeptics. I believe probably the vast majority of things that are reported as paranormal fall into several categories. A very small percentage that reflects something that's truly inexplicable. It's the smallest percentage, probably. Then you have hoaxes. You have people with issues, mental issues. You have people who are well-meaning but just mistaken. And, you know, those are just a few of the categories. But again, we have, if you take something like UFOs, there's thousands upon thousands upon thousands of cases every year. Let's say that only 3% of those cases have something to it. What does it hurt? And here's where I have a problem. you know, when I talked to Shermer, he said something to the effect, well, we just put that aside and we realize that we can't explain everything. Well, that's okay in it to an extent, but why don't we, let's try to explain it and let's really delve into it, because that 3% may turn everything else on its head. Let's go after that 3% or 5% or whatever it is. One guy that I had on, Joe Nickel, who is a skeptic, said, well, you're one of the 5%ers. And I'm like, you betcha I am, because I don't believe for a minute that all of this stuff is explicable by science, or at least current science. I mean, maybe it is explicable by science, but I often say it's the science of, you know, the 25th century or something. But it's just the dogmatism in saying it can't be, it can't be, it can't be. It's just, it's extremely disheartening. And maybe there is, you know, maybe there is a conspiracy to quash all of it, but I don't think that's going to work, because I think we live in a time, we have shows like yours, we have shows like mine, we have so many more outlets. And I think that's why, you know, I think you're seeing cracks in the mainstream media, what you talked about earlier. I think things are starting to get out more. If you look at a book like Leslie Kane's book, the UFO General's book, On the Record. Fabulous book done by a real journalist with some great reporting of very, very credible witnesses, very detailed. And what we need, I think, are more of those. I think we, as paranormal, I hate to use this word, but believers, need to have more works like that with more facts behind it.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, the skeptics are going to do what they're going to do. I think it's up to us to try to provide more facts and do a better job of just saying, hey, here's more evidence. Here's more evidence. Here's more evidence. You can't ignore it. And we're going to blow the horn loud to let people know that it's out there. Because I know myself, I believe that, you know, almost, I would say almost universally, the people that call me on Campfire, I believe they've experienced something. And these are things that happened to them 20, 30, 40 years ago. I don't believe that there, now there may be a few people who have overactive imaginations or whatever, but for the most part, these people are very sincere. And I don't think they're lying.
I'm with you, Jim. And I also think your approach makes a lot of sense in terms of you have to keep bringing the data over and over again and being relentless with it. I guess I do feel like you also need to explore, or we as a group, as a community of believers, need to explore that other side. And I think sometimes it gets, people don't want to go there because they don't want to be labeled with conspiracy, or they don't want to deal with the larger issues. But I mean, one thing that impresses me about the UFO phenomenon, the way that it's kind of keeps growing and morphing and all the great work that's been done there. And I have to tell you this, we've never done one show on UFOs. It's just not really in our strike zone there. But since I have you on, and it's something you cover a lot, it gives me a chance to talk to a topic that I find fascinating. But what I was going to bring your attention to and wanted to chat with you about is the recently released, or really it wasn't recently released, but recently confirmed memo from JFK back in the 60s.
Oh, yes.
CIA memo.
Right.
That clearly indicates that he was aware of a UFO presence. And his concern was that, hey, let's make sure we give the Russians a heads up.
Exactly.
So that we don't start a nuclear war.
Now, here is an instance where I will say I will fully go with you on that conspiracy train, because I think it is fascinating to me that not only did he release this memo, but if you look at the dates on the memo was right before his assassination. And then all of a sudden, nothing else comes up of this whole topic under the Johnson administration in this regard, at least that we know of. To me, that's very suspicious. I believe if you talk about conspiracies, I think there is a wide range of possibility that the UFO phenomena is subject to at least some cover up by our federal government. I don't think there's any question about that whatsoever. I don't feel the least bit weird saying that I believe in a conspiracy in that regard, because I think that the government would say, well, we can't tell. Let's say the government did know about ETs. I could very easily see governmental officials saying, we can't tell people. They'll go crazy. They'll panic. And there's been stories done about Winston Churchill felt that way, going back to some sightings way back. I do tend to think that there's some conspiracy possibilities. One book that I would recommend that people read, which really doesn't, it actually, there's explanation for the Roswell crash that I'm not sure that I buy into. But if you want to see how capable our government is of deception, just read Area 51 by Annie Jacobson. Very well sourced. You talked to a lot of the people that were still alive who worked at Area 51, and listened to some of the deep cover and some of the different things the government did. It renewed my belief in our government's ability to deceive us.
Right, and I think you can look in any number of areas to get that same confirmation, if you will. And then the question becomes, you know, just as we would with a person, if you've deceived me here and you've deceived me here and you've deceived me here, then where is my real confidence that you're not deceiving me in all these other places? And shouldn't that then be
the
presumption that there is a deception going on? And particularly the pattern that seems to be repeated is a term that you mentioned earlier, and that's status quo. You know, wherever there's this need to defend the status quo. So, you know, if we jump back into the topic that's been hot for us, near-death experience and survival of consciousness, you know, what institutions are most threatened by that? Well, clearly it gets into the culture war issues of, you know, science has a strong vested interest in things staying the way they are in terms of this materialistic mind equals brain model we have. We can go into UFOs, we can go into ghosts. Over and over again, there's institutions with a strong vested interest to maintain the status quo, and it seems to fit quite nicely with, let's ridicule it, let's give it the giggle factor, let's relegate it to the back page, if you will, and the sensationalized. And
Well, let's talk about NDEs for a minute. If you think about, you know, most skeptics are atheists. Well, if there's an afterlife, and NDEs would be a pretty good indication. If they're not biological, what are they? They're some kind of indication possibly of an afterlife. What could fly more in the face of something like atheism? And I don't mean not believing in one certain religion, but not believing in any higher power, not believing in any afterlife. That would totally fly in the face of atheism, which is a major tenet of skepticism.
Sure. No, definitely. You're right. What surprised me is the extent to which that same science, that same research is very threatening to mainstream Christianity. So it really has a huge problem. It doesn't fit either place. So if you want to go over into mainstream medicine and science, they don't like it because it violates their atheistic underpinnings, if you will. And then the same is true with mainstream Christianity that really wants to confine things to a very narrow set of tenets and dogma. You know, it steps outside of that range too. So,
I know what you're saying. And the thing is I think the truth, if we somehow were enlightened and knew the truth about all these matters, it would blow all of our minds, because I don't know that anybody has the answers. I mean, everybody is out there saying, I have the answer. You know, it's this religion, it's that religion, it's this belief, it's not believing in anything. The more I learn, the less I know that I know. And I just know there's something going on. And I am not for a minute convinced that it's that each and everything can be measured in a test tube or, you know, measured by a ruler. I think there are things out there beyond our understanding and beyond the most intelligent person in the world's understanding, no matter how great a scientist they are.
Great. So that's a pretty good capstone on where your journey with the Paranormal Podcast has brought you. Anything to add to that in terms of your perspective on the paranormal? And maybe you hinted that you might want to talk a little bit about your personal beliefs that you don't always inject into the show. Where do you come down on some of these topics? Where do you come down on survival of consciousness? Where do you come down on the reality of UFOs?
Well, it kind of falls into, I hate to put it in a neat little box, but that kind of 5% rule. I just have the sense, and it's basically my gut feeling. Somebody would say, well, how can you back that up? Well, I really can't, but again, I think when it comes to UFOs, there's a few percent that are not explicable. Could they be ETs? Possibly. Are they? Not necessarily. I don't know. Do I believe in ghosts? Yes, I believe that there can be something that people see that's non-human. Are they necessarily people who are crossing over to communicate with us? I don't know. and you could go down the list, and basically at the end of it is, I believe that there's a small percentage, but I don't know. And I hate to say it, but that's been the take-home message for me in doing these programs for 6 years. I don't know. And we have a lot of things going on. We have jimherold.com. I invite everybody over there. I actually, one thing that I've found very therapeutic has been our campfire show, which we've done for the last couple of years. And I thought it would be a nice little fun thing to do, but it's really been almost like a paranormal support group, because people feel that they won't be judged and they can tell people stories. And there's stories that people have had for 20, 30, 40 years that they never told anyone, but they've told on our show. And I'm very honored by that. And just today I got a PDF of the author copy of my book coming out on September 15th, Jim Harold's Campfire, True Ghost Tales. So if folks want to check that at jimherold.com, we'll have links to that. That's coming up soon. And just continuing our shows there and our additional shows over at jimherold.net for our Plus Club. So I'm just excited to continue the journey. And Alex, I hope someday we can get back together and I'll be able to say, you know, when I said I don't know, well, now we know. And I hope that happens. I don't know if it will, but it would be a great day if we could learn the secrets behind some of these great mysteries.
Yeah, it would, Jim. Then you know what? You've wrapped it up so nicely. I just can't go any further. You've blocked me, because that I don't know is something I've really pushed against pretty hard, because, of course, it's the default position, but we'll have to leave it for another time to maybe push into that, because it's that I don't know is also the hiding place for all the rascals on the other side who like to obscure things and not give us a straight on answer. But that's certainly not you. And you just keep doing that paranormal podcast, and we'll all, and the rest of your great shows that I'm less familiar with, but you've kind of motivated me and piqued my interest to go give those a look too. So once again, thanks so much for joining me today on Skeptico, Jim.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure, and I hope we get to chat again. Maybe sometime you could come over to one of my shows.
Thanks again to Jim Harold for joining me today on Skeptico and telling us about his really excellent show, The Paranormal Podcast. I hope you'll check that out and check out some of his other shows. Okay, next, I thought I'd take just a couple of minutes and talk about the direction of Skeptico, the direction the show's going in. Now, I realize I've kind of thrown a lot at you, beginning with the interview with Jim Mars a few episodes back, which really kind of threw people for a loop. And since then, especially in the forums, we've been talking a lot about conspiracy theories, as they call them, and the validity of some of the alternative views people have of our culture, our society, and the influences that kind of drive the power system that we live in. And we've followed that up with, even in this interview, talking with Jim about UFOs. And I know that's going to probably stir up a whole other hornet's nest with a lot of you. So some folks have asked, hey, is this show still about parapsychology? Is it still about psi? Is it still about NDE research? It absolutely is. Because these topics get to the fundamental questions of science. Who are we, really? Where did we come from? Where are we going? These are the fundamental questions of science that don't get asked directly. So as we've talked a lot about on this show, we can only go so far with the experiments. We have to keep an eye on the experiments, and we have to keep looking for new experiments that further our knowledge, our understanding. But after a while, you have to say, you know, there's enough good data on near-death experience for me to make some kind of conclusion there, for me to say it's up to the other side to show that survival of consciousness isn't the most likely outcome from these experiments. So in that same spirit of inquiry, I'm driven to look beyond the experiments, beyond the data, as I've been talking about for the last 6 months or a year. And that's what's pushed me into these other areas. How does deception, how does enough information that doesn't change the paradigm. How does that work in other areas that we're more familiar with? How does it work in politics? How does it work in world affairs? How does it work in the rough and tumble world of science business, where we're trying to sell something like climate change, or we're trying to get a drug approved, or other areas where science intersects with business? So on Skeptico, we're still interested in all the topics we've been interested all along. I'd say I'm just inclined to take a little bit of a broader view on the influences behind those topics. As always, I hope that fits with your interest. I hope you'll stay with me on this journey and contribute to it in any way you see fit, whether that's communicating with me, talking about the show with other people, or if you have the talent and the ability, joining me as a guest host on Skeptico. Of course, if you want more information about this show, please check out the Skeptico website. It's at skeptiko.com. You'll find links to all our previous 145 shows, an email, Facebook link to me, a link to our forums, a whole bunch of good stuff. Please check it out. Have several interesting interviews coming up. Please stay with me for all of that. Until next time, bye for now.